Hey there, can I get an iced lavender matcha latte with almond milk and light ice? Oh, and I'll take that carrot muffin too.
For sure. That'll be $11.78, and you can just tap your card or your phone right there, and then once it's gone through, it'll ask if you want to leave a tip.
Oh, right. Okay. This is a very common scene these days. You find yourself patronizing a place like a coffee shop where you walked up to a counter, ordered, and waited at the counter for something you purchased to be ready for your consumption. But in the not-so-distant past, this wasn't a transaction on which we normally tipped. And now it's not just coffee shops asking for your choice of 10, 15, or 20%. It's the salad bar across from the office, the dry cleaners down the block, and even the local grocery store now has a tip jar at the checkout. According to data from Pew Research Center, 72% of adults say tipping is expected in more places today than compared to 5 years ago. But the same survey also reveals that people are hella confused about which services and products they should be tipping on. Only 34% of Americans feel very confident in knowing which goods or services to tip for and how much. Tipflation is a term many economists have started using to describe the rising pressure for tips in newer spaces. But how important is tipping to our economy? Should the consumer be responsible for ensuring a living wage to service workers? Or is there more to the picture than we're seeing? And can someone please explain to me how much I should be tipping for my matcha latte with almond milk? Start taking notes, because this is Grown Up Stuff.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Homes.com knows having the right agent can make or break your home search. That's why they provide home shoppers with an agent directory that gives you a detailed look at each agent's experience, like the number of closed sales in a specific neighborhood, average price range, and more. It lets you easily connect with all the agents in the area you're searching, so you can find the right agent with the right experience and ultimately the right home for you. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Relax and unwind tonight with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as another busy work week flies by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
Hey, hey, my tip-weary friends. Welcome to another exciting episode of Grown-Up Stuff, How to Adult, the podcast dedicated to help you learn grown-up lessons like how to calculate the tip on your dinner bill and figuring out how much to tip your barista on a single cup of coffee. I'm Molly, and as always, I am joined by a man who needs no introduction and always tips 20%, Matt Stillo! Now, a few days ago, Matt, I sent you a link to a Pew Research Center quiz. It's titled, Do You Tip More or Less Often Than the Average American? Tell me what some of your results are. I'm going to share some of mine.
My responses were, I don't think were all that interesting because I typically tip. But to seeing where most people are tipping. So like eating at a restaurant where there are servers, obviously. Getting a haircut, mm-hmm. I was happy to see, because who doesn't enjoy catching up with their barber?
Right.
This is what was interesting, though, to me. It seems like a lot of people are not tipping at the coffee house.
That's the area that confuses me the most. In this situation, the question is, are you always tipping, often tipping, sometimes tipping, rarely tipping, or never tipping? And buying a coffee or other beverage at a coffee shop, 12% said they always tip. Another 12% said they often tip. 27%, the majority, said they sometimes tip. 23% said they rarely tip. And 25% said never tip. I fell squarely in that 27% because it's a quick interaction. I'm not sitting down and being served consistently over a period of time. And I just don't know. Now, I usually, because again, I have built relationships with the coffee shops that I go to, especially in my neighborhood. So I tip those places. But if it's like a place that I don't have a strong connection to, I don't know that I'll always tip.
I worked at a coffee bar, and so there definitely are different types of coffee. Like, if I go to a shop and they're just, like, opening a tap and pouring coffee into it and giving it to you in a cup, like, that's a different situation. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to what they call, like, a third wave coffee bar where they're doing all the drinks, all the espressos, the mochas, they're whipping up the foam, they're pouring your latte art, I mean, that is a really big skill, and you're paying for a little bit more of a bespoke coffee experience and bespoke service. And so in that situation, I would definitely tip.
Well, Matt, I'm curious what are some of the questions you have about tipping still? Like, what are the biggest points of confusion for you?
You and I were talking about this where it's just like, if there is this big divide between, like, if you're eating at a restaurant where there are servers, people are tipping, and there's a restaurant where there's no servers, people aren't tipping, then what we were talking about is kind of like, then what are we tipping for? Are we tipping for just the fact of someone walking food out of a kitchen and putting it on your table? Like, is it like, are you tipping for, like, the kindness or the friendliness of the interaction or how quickly people are, you know, coming out to you?
Or on the quality of the product itself?
The quality of the product itself. You know, is it situational? So are there any hard and fast rules was, like, my biggest question. What about you?
I agree. And on top of that, I want to add, like, tipping practices during the holiday season. Like, for people who you interact with every day, like, I've, you know, often read about or heard about, like, tipping your landlord or your
superintendent.
What exactly are the rules, and, like, how much should you be tipping during the holidays? But I think you and I will get answers to all of our tipping questions, because if you haven't guessed it yet, we're talking about tipping today.
This is Accurate, and we're going to learn about it all from our guest, Stacey Vanek Smith.
Stacey is the author of the book Machiavelli for Women and also a longtime public radio reporter and audio journalist. You may know her from her work with NPR's Planet Money and from her time as the global economics correspondent for NPR.
And while she was at NPR, Stacey guest hosted an episode of the show Life Kit about tipping culture and practices. Today, she is a senior story editor for Bloomberg Audio.
Stacey Vanek Smith, welcome to the show. We are so excited to have you here. We are going to talk about tipping, and I want to start off with a very, very basic question. How did tipping begin? Where did this all come from?
Well, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here. I feel like this is a hard question to start with because it gets very dark very quickly.
Let's go there.
It started after the Civil War when slavery ended.
Okay.
So people who had been enslaved were suddenly on the job market getting jobs. And I think a lot of service jobs were suddenly opened up to people who'd been enslaved. And the pay for these was abysmal. And so this practice started of people tipping, because tipping seemed like sort of a middle ground between someone making a living wage and someone being enslaved, essentially.
Wow.
So it's the history of it is horrific. And, you know, if you go to other countries, if you travel abroad, a lot of times a tip is like a couple bucks or, you know, just sort of a, like, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a substantial part of someone's pay. It's only really here that we do that. Tipping, it's just a mess. And I've looked at tipping for a while. I find it really interesting. It is a huge part of our culture. I think there are good things about it, for sure. But I don't think I've ever talked to anyone who was like, this system is awesome. Like, no one likes it.
Yeah, no.
But it's our system. This is the system we have.
It's actually interesting to learn that, because, like, there's something to me that is always, and I used to work in restaurants and stuff, there's something to me that's always felt inherently wrong about tipping. That, like, if people are, like, depending on this as part of their salary, then you're not paying your staff what they deserve to be paid. You know, my wife and I, one of our favorite restaurants is this Japanese restaurant called Ichiran, and they've carried over their culture of it being a no tipping establishment. And that's part of why we love it so much. It just feels like if they're not asking for a tip, then they're paying their workers a fair wage. And the service is still awesome. But that said, tipping doesn't exist in many cultures. But are we seeing a shift where other places are starting to adopt our system?
I feel like all of us have deep emotions around tipping, especially lately, because money is tight, prices have gone up so much, the culture around tipping has changed pretty suddenly and pretty extremely. But the idea of not tipping, it's so hard. And, you know, people will say, like, oh, you don't have to tip here. And it's like, I don't But I actually think the culture around tipping was starting to change here before the pandemic in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Because there was, like, Danny Meyer and David Chang had, like, published op-eds in the New York Times saying, like, we're not having tipping. And they explained it saying, listen, this creates a lot of inequity in the kitchen. I think Danny Meyer was like, my chefs are making less than the bartender because of tips, and they don't get distributed equitably, and I just make sure I pay everybody a living wage. And so, you know, you'd go to one of these restaurants, kind of like you were saying, Matt, and there was this feeling of like, oh, everybody's actually being taken care of. They are making a living wage. This isn't on me.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think the reason that we find this topic so endlessly fascinating and interesting is because we know there's something wrong with the system and we feel it all the time. I think that strange feeling you were talking about, Matt, is like that. Mm-hmm. You're like, something's wrong here. I'm being asked to tip as if it's just like a thank you, but it feels like it's not really a thank you. You're supplementing someone who's been underpaid. So it's messed up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
This gets very politicized very fast. People have extremely strong opinions about tipping. I think one of the reasons that it's hung around is a lot of like kind of powerful interest groups around restaurants. Like basically it's a way for restaurants to post lower prices and to still get a higher amount of money to employees, like a competitive pay to employees. And I think when restaurants try to not do that, which Danny Meyer and David Chang did before the pandemic, but they both went back to tipping during the pandemic. People were having so much trouble finding people to work. And if you're going to pick a restaurant to work at and it's really competitive and you have like five job offers, are you going to go to the place that's like, we're not going to tip you, we're going to pay you a solid living wage? Versus, especially during the pandemic, people were, I think, had an increased awareness of essential workers and the importance of that work and the difficulty of it. And so the tips were pretty good. It's like, I'm not going to not get tips. So I think they went back to a tipping situation just to be competitive enough to get the workers they wanted. They had to.
Interesting, yeah. Tipping can be super fraught and complicated. While some service workers saw an increase in tips from 2020 to 2021, especially food delivery workers and workers with a more distant role at quick service and full service restaurants, according to a study published in the Compensation and Benefits Review, others saw a decrease in tips, especially those working in full service restaurants with more face-to-face interactions with customers. But the global pandemic hasn't been the only catalyst of change in our tipping practices. Today, technology may be the largest driver for tipping. In March of 2014, NPR reported that in some businesses, employees saw a 50% increase in tips with the introduction of new swivel-screened payment processing systems like Toast, Clover, or Square. These new tools also beg the question, how much of that tip actually gets to the person on the other side of the counter?
Now we have like the rise of these tip screens and the dreaded screen turn. And Square owns a lot of them. And Square takes a cut of the whole transaction.
Really?
Yes, tip included. So if you tip more, their cut is bigger. And then the restaurant will choose to either honor the whole tip or whatever.
Wow. Okay, that is very interesting.
Yeah. So they have an incentive to have higher tipping numbers. And then I think for employers, like they want to keep their workers happy. They need to keep their workers. And it's just easier for them to not deal with raising prices and pay their workers maybe less than a living wage and just be like, well, you can make it up with the tip. And then there you are in this awkward situation, just trying to get a coffee. And all of a sudden you're like, $9 feels like a lot, but you're looking at this person who's looking at you and you're like, I guess 25% is good.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then it raises all these questions and people get very emotional. During the pandemic, I think a lot of people wanted to tip more. They wanted to tip workers more as just like a gesture.
They were essential workers.
Right.
Yeah, we were trying to help each other out. Now things are a little different, but tipping has just increased. And also we started tipping people we didn't used to tip before during the pandemic, right? Like there was a tip jar at my supermarket and the tip jar stayed. And now we're all kind of, we don't want to be that person who's like, I'm not leaving a tip.
Yeah. You bring up a really good point of like, What is the reason for tipping? Like, are we tipping on skill? Are we tipping on general treatment and personality?
Ostensibly, we're tipping because we are acknowledging exceptional service or good service as like a thanks, you did extra work, here's extra money.
Mm-hmm.
But functionally, that is not how the tips are being used. In a lot of cases, and this is where it gets even more complicated state by state and everything, but in a lot of cases, like, that money is getting people up to minimum wage. So in that case, it's not really acknowledging exceptional service as much as it is like, here is my contribution towards you making a living wage. And that I think we recognize both things are going on and you sort of feel resentful. It feels like a bait and switch. It's like this price was presented to me. It's like, okay, this coffee is supposed to cost $5, but really the coffee doesn't cost $5. Really the coffee costs $8. And then I can choose to pay $5 for it and I will be taking money away from this person who is looking at me, who made my coffee,
mm-hmm.
and like, just tell me it's $8. I don't know. It puts us all, I think this is why people get so emotional about tipping.
Not only do people get emotional about tipping, but there also doesn't seem to be one school of thought on how to approach tipping. According to data from the Pew Research Center, 21% of Americans say that tipping is more of a choice, while 29% say it's an obligation, and 49% say it depends on the situation. Many of us know that tipping is a way to help workers in the service industry make a living wage, but many consumers feel like the burden shouldn't fall on them. And more than 72% of Americans are opposed to businesses including automatic service charges or gratuity onto their bill.
People are always looking for who to blame. So some people are like, oh, workers are so entitled. They don't want to do anything. They expect these huge tips. That's not true. In a lot of cases, workers are not making anywhere close to enough to live.
Right.
Or people is like, it's the business owners. They're underpaying their workers. They're exploiting people and customers are expected to make up the difference. Well, that's true, but they're trying to get people to buy their stuff. And if they price in higher wages, people aren't going to buy their stuff. So then it's like, well, it's the customer's fault because they don't want to pay workers. But we've all seen prices rise faster than our wages.
Right.
And our buying power has diminished. Our credit card debt has gone through the roof. Our savings has like...
What savings?
Dissolved.
Savings? What's that? I don't...
It's so true. So we're all struggling and basically passing this football of higher prices around, mm-hmm. and it converges on tips and like this weird cultural awkwardness that is the American tipping situation.
And I want to drill down a little bit onto something that you brought up earlier, which is like this concept of a living wage, the concept of a minimum wage, and getting people up to, if not minimum, then a living wage. This is something that I knew about for a long time, but I had no idea was actually legal. So like minimum wage across the country is $7.25, but I know some people who make $2 an hour because they were getting tipped on top of it. And, you know, my first question for a long time was like, how is that even legal? But it turns out it is legal because of a thing called a sub-minimum wage. Can you talk to us about what a sub-minimum wage is?
So Sylvia Allegretto is an economist. She also worked as a tipped worker, as a waitress and a bartender for years. So she's very familiar with this. This is actually what inspired her work on minimum wage. So the federal minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. States will often have higher minimum wages, like Washington State. Their minimum wage is $16 an hour. There's also a federal sub-minimum wage, which has not changed since like 1993 or something.
What?
I know. It's $2.13 an hour.
Oh, my God.
You can't pay any worker this. They have to be in a certain industries. But the rules around it are very vague. So like a lot of people, like if you work at a car wash or you're a massage therapist or work as a bartender or a server, you are eligible to get a sub-minimum wage. Now, a lot of states do not allow that. Like Washington State, with its $16 minimum wage, does not allow for sub-minimum wages, but a lot of states do. And so depending on where you live, the pay and tipping situation is just really different for the workers who are serving you your lunch or coffee. $2.13. It's mind-blowing. It's like what someone would make in the 30s.
And going back to this, it just feels illegal to me. Like, yeah. I just cannot believe that something like that is legal.
Well, here's what is supposed to happen. So technically speaking, you can pay someone a subminimum wage, but if their tips do not get them up to minimum wage, the employer's supposed to make up the difference.
Oh, interesting.
Here's the catch. So what Sylvia Allegretto told me and what she found in her research was that a lot of times like this just doesn't happen in practice because she used this example and it sort of rang very true for me. She's like, you know, let's say it's someone working a diner shift in the middle of the night. This woman is desperately trying to get off of overnights, but she's trying to get in good with her boss. Her tips fall short. She's supposed to then go to her boss and say like, hey, I did not make enough money. You need to supplement my income. But if she's trying to get in good with the boss or feels like right. that's going to be badly received or is worried about losing her job, she may not do that. And Sylvia Allegretto was like, I had a bunch of service jobs. No employer ever once asked me to report my income to be like, did you actually get up to minimum wage? And probably doesn't happen a lot.
Well, and there's probably no way for the government, local or federal, to penalize the employer if that was the case, you know, that they needed to, because the tips aren't always reported accurately either.
Right. They're in cash.
Right.
Or like, you know, the employer can be like, listen, we didn't know. Like, it gets really fuzzy. And I mean, I think Clinton tried really hard to raise the subminimum wage, but apparently the Restaurant Association was like really fought for this and was like, you know, jobs will be lost
right.
if this happens. This is always the argument around minimum wage. And I don't think it's completely false either. Like, I don't want to villainize small business owners because I also think that they're dealing with a lot. But you end up with people making $2.13 an hour. And like, customers don't know.
No.
Yeah. And this is the thing that always makes me like realize that, like, man, I have to tip. Like, I don't really even care if like the service isn't that bad. It's just like people are making $2 a goddamn hour.
Yes.
Like, and I don't think anyone knows this really. Like, I worked in the industry and I didn't even really understand the concept of the subminimum wage. So it's really important for people to know this.
Well, it's so hard to know because, first of all, like every state, some states have different subminimum wages.
Right.
So if you happen to travel to a different state, you've got to look it up. Economic Policy Institute has a good wage tracker that is free, but it's so confusing and you don't know what a particular business is doing either.
Right,
like
right.
even if you know the laws of the state, you don't know what a business is doing. And like some employees are sometimes counted a subminimum wage that would surprise you. It's so confusing if you're a customer. It's really hard. Like you just do your best, you know? It's complicated. Tipping, it's complicated.
Tipping, it's complicated. That is the title of this episode. Tipping, it's complicated.
We are correct to be uncomfortable and upset about tipping. That is what I would tell everyone. I talked to a barista for a tipping story I did for NPR, and he worked in Philly. He was so wonderful. He was in his 30s, and he was like, you know, I love this job. I love making espresso. Like, this is my career. This is my job. And he's like, people look at my job like, oh, it's okay if you're underpaid because this is a job for like young people or people who are transitioning or it's a side hustle.
Mm-hmm.
This is not someone's whole job. But he's like, it is my whole job. And he said, now this is crushing. I have never shaken this since I talked with him. He had to do the screen turn. And he's like, it's really awkward. People say all kinds of weird things. Like, and he's like, I'm a human being. Like, it's mm-hmm. really hard when someone's like, well, I'm not tipping or why is the tip so high or whatever. And I said, well, can you tell if somebody doesn't tip? Can you tell what buttons people push, essentially?
Yeah.
Because there's always that weird thing where the person like turns the screen and kind of looks away. And
yeah.
I said, well, do you feel bad if someone doesn't tip or is it just kind of roll off your back? He's like, no, I feel bad.
Yeah.
Because he's like, it's like this person is saying, like, I don't care if you make a living wage or not.
That's so hard.
Yeah. And I think that's my other problem with the whole situation, too, because it's like they deserve to have a living wage. Like if you're working a
yes.
job and you're working a job 8 hours a day, like what gives here with, you know, people feeling like they deserve less than a living wage? It just blows my mind.
Yeah.
Yes. No, that's so true. But I do also have a lot of sympathy for customers because like we are getting asked to tip a lot.
Oh, absolutely.
It's tipflation. That's the new term.
I mean, and it's kind of, it's true, right?
Yeah.
And there was some data from Bankrate that people were starting to tip less. because it's just like at a certain point, you can only afford so much. So like
right.
from an economist's perspective, it's like, well, that's not great either. It's like, OK, well, I'm just going to get a coffee once a week instead of 5 days a week or whatever it is. Well, that's really bad for the coffee and the worker and everybody,
right.
too.
Yeah.
So I think we're all kind of in a tough situation together and it's messy.
Why is it so important that we continue to tip our Uber Eats, Grubhub, Seamless delivery people, and our Uber and Lyft drivers?
Right. A very tiny percentage of people tip their Uber and Lyft drivers.
Right.
And I was talking with Shubhranshu Singh about this. He's a professor of hotel management. And this rang so true. He was like, by the time the app asks us for a tip, our interaction with them is done. Mm. It's not a person standing in front of a screen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because we do feel so sort of overtaxed and overtipped, and it's like, do you want to leave $5? It's like, I don't know. That ride was more expensive already than I thought it was going to be.
Right.
But those workers are often earning like not much. And this is the same with hotels, too. I mean, there's a big socialization cultural issue with this, too, right? We feel that pressure, right, with the screen turn or even at a restaurant when someone leaves a tab. It's like the personal interaction, having to kind of face the person who is being affected by your tipping decision, I think affects our tipping decisions a lot. And if you know you're never going to see the person again.
Right.
But it doesn't mean that that person isn't the person who needs your tip more. So I think it's worth thinking about. I do not want to pile guilt on anybody or anything, but I just think an awareness of like how little a lot of people who clean hotels earn, how little a lot of Uber and Lyft drivers earn is important to just keep in mind and like to just try to give what you can or to have a strategy in place, even if it's not perfect, just to think about it instead of just like responding to the pressures of the moment, which I am 100% guilty of.
I think it's a very adult thing to feel a little guilt every now and then and to have it move our actions in a better way.
I think that's true, actually. Maybe the adulting lesson here is that like you learn how to evolve your relationship with guilt.
That's a big adulting topic. I think we're here for it, though.
Well, it's interesting because I think that this is the first episode where it's really more like we just need to understand more about tipping. Because, again, I think that people could maybe come into this going like, God, I just hate tipping. I'm hoping they're going to come here and tell me I don't need to do it. And it's interesting that like the more we know about it, that we realize how important it is and how people unfair, you know, it's a raw deal for everyone. It feels like a damned if you do, damned if you don't sort of an episode to me. And but also like it is important to know all this stuff. Yeah, it's funny because like we're I guess I'm walking away with knowing more but not really sure about like what the action item is for people here.
I feel like that's the most adult thing of all. Walking away with a more nuanced understanding of the problem and no solution.
Yeah.
I mean, I think what we're really dealing with here is inflation. And I know I keep talking about that, but like food delivery, I think, is such a great example because the food delivery situation is so extreme. It's like you order a burrito that costs $9 and somehow it's $40 after all is said and done. And that is so many fees get piled on there. Like, fees for everything. And so the Biden administration has done a big push on this, pushing back against fees. Like hotels are really guilty of this, like resort fees, airlines, ticket change fees. Oh. Some of the fees are huge. But like I think food delivery is one that we can all relate to where you're like, what? But at this point, you're like, I want the burrito. I guess I'll pay $40 for it. And then on the top of that, it's like, would you like to tip your driver?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so one thing I can recommend is like, to exclude the fees when you tip. The suggested tip will include all those fees. And you shouldn't be tipping on top of fees and taxes. But there's a term economists use for all this stuff together, like higher tips and fees. It's called stealth inflation. And there's a sort of a school of thought among some economists that inflation is actually higher than we think it is because of stuff like this. Fees sometimes do get factored into the inflation index that the government looks at, but tips don't. So altogether, like the prices of things maybe have risen more than even has been acknowledged. And I think that's also why it's so upsetting, because we are starting to realize that like maybe there's a big lifestyle adjustment that has to happen. It's like this dirty secret in our economy. Like businesses don't want to acknowledge it. We don't want to acknowledge it. So we're like charging tons of things on our credit cards, paying what looks like a pretty reasonable price that ends up being like much higher than we thought. So I don't know. I think that's a lot of what's happening. And I think that's a lot of like why we're upset is we sort of feel like something's being hidden from us, which I think it is. And the most vulnerable people in our economy are the ones often bearing the brunt of this. We're sort of at the mercy of people's tips and goodwill and budgets, frankly.
I think it's interesting that you brought up tipping on top of tax. And I had never thought about this until I was at a restaurant with my brother, and he's always been better at math than I am. He's like, you're tipping on top of the tax. And I was like, what? And he was like, so basically what that means is you're including the tax as a portion of the total tip you're paying, which is basically like thanking a fee with a tip. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. I've never really thought about it that way. But when you talk about all the services and fees tacking on top of that, you're also paying a percentage of those too. So is this something that you would, you know, because Molly and I were debating about this beforehand, like,
because I am always just like, stop nickel and dime the people, as we've just discussed, yeah, who are earning $2.13 an hour.
Yes. Yeah, so is there a hard and fast guidance there?
I mean, I don't think there's hard and fast guidance. I think Molly has an excellent point. What I would say to counter that a little bit is if you were in a position where you were really trying to figure out what you can afford and you want to be a good person and a good customer, but your budget is really limited, you can just take the core amount, add the tip onto that, and that is a decent tip. Like, you do not have to feel bad about that tip. So you can sort of like make some rules for yourself where you're like, okay, well, I'd love to leave more and maybe at some point in the future I can, but for now I will leave this. It's like, okay, what's the minimum tip that I leave? Like,
yeah,
let's say the service is terrible. Let's say the order's wrong. Everything's bad. The tip now becomes just a function of you sort of acknowledging and honoring this person's like wage situation.
Right, right.
And so like, what's the amount that you want to leave in that situation? And then if the service is amazing and you love the person and they've crafted you the most beautiful, whatever latte art you've ever seen, or you just think they're wonderful and you want to acknowledge that, I think there's tipping more is never going to be a bad thing. But I would also recommend one thing you can do, especially too, if you're pinched, is tipping in cash is always better, which I know a lot of us don't carry that much cash around now. But if you want a sort of a fail-safe way to like make sure you're getting money into the right hands, cash is the best.
Yeah.
But also tipping in cash feels weird.
Yeah.
And then I feel like if I do hit the like no tip, then I feel like I want to be like, but I tipped in cash. Did you, you saw that, right?
Did you see it?
Yes. I always feel like I need to like, yes, I need to like add that footnote of like, it's in cash.
It's like tipping theater, right? Yes. You're like waiting until they're looking at you so then you can pretend like you're sneaking money into the tip jar, but you're like, I just want you to know I'm tipping you.
Yeah. Or I'll write down like zero and then put like cash in the line on the receipt.
Oh, that's smart.
But the fact that we even have to write cash is because it's part of the tipping theater. We're like, we don't want you to think.
I'm writing zero because like, you guys did a terrible job. I'm like, no, there's cash there too.
Yeah.
Yes. I don't know what people in other countries do with the enormous chunk of our brains that we are spending, like doing all these calculations and dealing with all this like emotional, like navigating this like emotional terrain. Like, it's a terrible situation. Tipping is terrible.
Hopefully they're putting it towards solving the climate crisis. That's what
I
hope.
Absolutely. Yes. Somewhere on Square, there is a button for saving the planet.
Coming up on Grown Up Stuff, How to Adults.
I had a plumber come and he was like, oh, can you pay me on Square? And suddenly I was like, am I supposed to tip my plumber? that is where things get really tricky.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Mother's Day is coming, and Mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get Mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get Mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting Mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get Mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for Mom is Mother's Day. Because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for Mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
And we're back with more grown-up stuff, how to adult.
So now we want to get down to, like, what is, like, common sense practice around tipping. So what really are the services and or goods that we really should be tipping for every single time?
I would say, first of all, look up where you are and look up what the tipping rules are in your area. Mm-hmm. I think that is a big deal. Then I would say, like, anyone who is potentially earning a sub-minimum wage, that is your absolute top priority because they're making potentially $2.13 an hour. Other than that, I mean, $7.25, which is the federal minimum wage, like, that's also not a ton. If you are in a business that is encouraging you to tip or where the tip is sort of part of the transaction, often that is a signal that that person is not really making a minimum wage, that they are potentially counting on your tip to get up to a living wage. So it's not just like, oh, there's a tip jar at the dry cleaner. It's like the tipping is a big part of the transaction here. I think that's a tell. After that, I would say, I know it's a lot and hotels are a lot, but I would say, like, leaving a tip in a hotel or, like, Uber drivers often, things like that. You don't have to tip 20% in every case, but just I think leaving something is important. And if you're really, really on a budget, I think even just leaving what you can is good. And I would say, like, the key thing is knowing where you are and what the rules are where you are. And that is a really good baseline. Mm. And, yeah, I would say just, like, be kind to yourself because this is a mess. Like, it's a mess. That's my major takeaway, is like, this is chaos.
In some of the research that we did, I came across this idea of, like, are we now tipping at places where we really shouldn't be?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I got some very funny comments where people were like, I had a plumber come and he was like, oh, can you pay me on Square? And suddenly he was like, I was like, am I supposed to tip my plumber? That is where things get really tricky. And I think the best advice I got was from Shubhranshu Singh. And what he said was, when in doubt, I tip 10%.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, yeah. It's one of those things where, like, it's not good. Like, no one's happy in that situation. But at least, like, the person who you tip 10% is not happy. You are not happy. No one's happy. But I think it's, like, it's sort of like a decent, I felt like it was, like, a reasonable and decent way to deal with a hard situation.
Maybe this is what we're learning, is if we can get to a place where no one is happy, then maybe that's exactly where we should be.
Then you're a real adult.
That everybody's happy?
If no one's happy, everyone's happy.
Yes, exactly. Actually, I talked to a man who worked in the music industry. He would, like, negotiate deals with, like, musicians and labels. And that's what he said. I was like, oh, do you have any negotiating tips? And he said, well, it's usually the sign of a good negotiation if no one's happy. And I was like, okay. He's like, if someone's, like, thrilled, usually that means that somebody got screwed. Mm. And if nobody's thrilled, that's usually a sign of, like, that everybody got a little screwed. And maybe that's the best we can hope for in this world.
That's true. That's something. Pew Research Center said that 57% of Americans say they tip 15% or less at a sit-down restaurant. As we kind of mentioned earlier, I always do 20 on top of all the taxes and fees.
Yeah.
Is this above and beyond? Like, what is, again, is this a regional thing? We talked a little bit before, like, where some people are like, or is 20 the new 15? And we should all be, at a sit-down restaurant scenario, we should all be assuming 20%, whether that's if you choose to do it on top of the fees or if you decided to do it, you know, before all the taxes and fees.
I would say the very minimum should be 15%. I mean, I think just based on the world we live in now, I think of 20 still as a good tip. And then above that is like a great tip. At a sit-down restaurant, like I really would say, I mean, if the person throws water in your face, tip 10%.
And this also brings up something that you had mentioned in your NPR article, that like the people should feel empowered to hit custom tip and to leave 15 or 20 if that's what they want to do.
Yes. This was something that I sort of started doing. It was like, okay, you make a rule for yourself. And it was like, I will tip 20%. So I think normalize custom tip.
I love that.
Yeah. So I liked that suggestion too, because it's sort of, I feel like part of what is upsetting as a customer is you sort of feel like all this pressure. It's like one of those things where it's like all this stuff happens and then you're like outside of the coffee shop with your coffee and you're like, wait, how much did I just pay? And you sort of feel like,
it feels like they're putting this emotional, social pressure on you in the moment.
Yes.
And by putting 25 as the minimum, they're getting away with something. Whereas, like, you should reclaim that moment and that awkwardness, probably know going into the transaction that you might be faced with that and go, like, hey, like, I've decided for myself that I'm going to tip 20%, you know, or I've decided for myself I'm going to tip 15%. So I'm not going to feel bad in this social moment to hit custom tip and leave what I'm comfortable with.
I like that idea of like reclaiming the awkwardness of that moment, because right. I do feel like there's this time pressure. There's this emotional pressure. You just want your king coffee. And it's like it's a lot coming at you all at once. And you haven't had coffee yet. You know what I mean? Like, it's just
right?
a lot coming at you.
That's the real crime here. And you haven't had your caffeine yet.
All this stuff is converging on the screen turn. It's like amazing. We're all still upright and talking, you know?
Yeah.
This is so true. I want to talk about tipping that we experience kind of in a different context, which is around the holidays. How much should we be tipping people who we interact with every day that we don't tip every day?
It depends, I think, on where you live. Like here in New York, it's traditional. Like if you live in a building with a doorman, you're supposed to tip the doorman.
Right.
And from what I've heard, it's like around 10% of your rent or something like that.
Of your monthly rent?
Yeah, yeah. Or like tip your super if your super is the one you interact with. Like I live in a building, it doesn't have a doorman, but I have a super. So the idea is like you tip your super. And then like your postal worker is someone you can
right.
think about tipping too at that time, because they're obviously, that's like a big time of year. They're working really hard. So those are the two that come to mind. We're not talking about people who are counting on your tip to get them to minimum wage. I think that's like an important thing to remember. Like that tip is really a tip. It's like really an acknowledgement of a relationship and service. To me, that feels like. So I would say that sounds great. I mean, I would say like find what feels appropriate to you. Sort of figure out what the custom is. Figure out like what the range within the custom is. And find like the point within that range where you feel comfortable. And also, it's like depends on what you can afford. And I mean, I think you just try to do what you can.
But Molly, you will never be a monster for making someone baked goods and giving them a personal note during the holiday.
But maybe it's just like, no, just give them more cash. Get your shit together. Give them more cash. I don't know.
I think anyone would appreciate that. And I've had your baked goods and they're delicious.
Oh, thank you.
This
thank you.
Is Brooklyn. You're supposed to be able to pay for things with baked goods.
Right?
Yes. We still have a little soul in this country, I like to think. It's not all about money.
Thank you, Stacey. That makes me feel better.
It's just an acknowledgement of value. And you can do that in a number of ways.
Yeah, I like that. You're right. Now, I don't plan on like just being like, here, barista, here's for my coffee today. Here's one scone that I baked at home.
Every day you give me a scone. So I thought I would give you a scone.
Give you a scone.
I thought I will give you a scone. Yeah.
Well, Stacey, you are now in a new position. Where can they find what the next thing that you're working on?
So I'm at Bloomberg now. I'm working as an editor there, but I am also filing stories for Marketplace a lot. So marketplace.org is probably the best place right now to find my stuff.
Amazing. I will constantly be reading and listening to all of it. So all of your work. So thank you so much.
Thank you. And I will be thinking about your scones.
Thank you. Thank you. Listen, play your cards right, Stacey. I might mail you some.
I'm thinking about it. Handwritten notes and scones.
Sounds like a good deal.
I mean, yeah.
I do my best.
Thank you so much, Stacey.
All right. Thanks, you guys.
Stacey, you've got some tea scones coming your way to show my appreciation for this illuminating conversation about tipping. This really has been a grown-up stuff first because there's not necessarily a clear path forward on tipping. But I've learned so much about how and why it started and a deeper understanding of what it means. Here's what else I'm taking away from our conversation with Stacey Vanek Smith on tipping. The practice of tipping in the United States began shortly after the Civil War. During Reconstruction, people who had formerly been enslaved had limited job options, so many took on roles in the food and service industry and agreed to work for tips without a wage. Tipping is a very complicated ecosystem, and some restaurateurs have tried to get rid of tipping and increase the base pay for all of their staff. But then they face the challenge of employees going elsewhere to try to make even more money in a role where the pay is far less, but there is an opportunity to make a lot more with tips. Those newer digital tools restaurants are now using to process payments like Square or Toast, you know, they're the tablet screens that turn around to face you and ask you how much you want to tip. Well, those companies are taking a percentage of every transaction total, including the tip. So while these have made tipping very easy for consumers, and in some cases have even increased the average amount that we tip, cash is still best when it comes to tipping service workers. The federal minimum wage rate is $7.25. However, if you are a tipped employee, then your employer is allowed to pay you a sub-minimum wage of $2.13. If the tipped employee doesn't make enough in tips and that subminimum wage to equal the federal minimum wage, then the employer has to make up the difference. That being said, it's unclear how often employees are reporting this and receiving the subsidization, nor do we know if employers are frequently checking in with their workers to make sure they did make enough. Around the holidays, you should probably think about tipping your super or building staff. But if that's a lot for you, you can always do a little less and share things like baked goods and a personalized note to acknowledge the relationship and show your gratitude for them. If you're really struggling to figure out whether or not you should be tipping, 10% is a good baseline to start. And as Stacey says, the sign of a good negotiation is if everyone leaves a little unhappy. Don't be afraid to custom tip. There are a lot of fees and taxes added to bills today, especially food delivery bills. It is completely acceptable to tip on the subtotal before all of those additional charges. And finally, sometimes being an adult is just informing yourself about a topic, developing a more nuanced understanding, and feeling even more confused and conflicted on the right approach. Matt, I never thought I'd say this, but I now think I would potentially consider tipping on the subtotal rather than the total. I also feel relieved to hear that Stacey approves of my holiday tipping practices. But Matt, what stuck with you from this episode?
I totally agree with you. And actually, I will tip on the subtotal, but what I will do is carry cash with me, because the thing with me is like, yes, you know, hearing about all the stuff about subminimum wages and how hard people are working and inflation and people are getting squeezed, I want to make sure that my tip is going directly to the person who is providing the excellent service. So cash is going to be flowing back into my pocket very shortly, and I'll make sure that I am tipping at least 20% in all of the scenarios we covered, but giving that cash directly to the person that's helping me.
Yeah, I agree, because that sub-minimum wage truly blew my mind.
Mind-blowing.
Tell the good people out there listening, what is next on Grown Up Stuff, How to Adult?
Next episode, we're digging into dog ownership, because it turns out having a dog is a lot more like having a kid.
I have wanted a dog for so long, Matt. Like, a dog to really just call my own. But I know that right now I don't have a life that is conducive to having a dog.
Don't yet despair, because we'll find out for sure in 2 weeks on the next episode of Grown Up Stuff, How to Adult.
And remember, you might not be graded in life, but it never hurts to do your homework.
This is a production from Ruby Studio from iHeartMedia. Our executive producers are Molly Socha
and Matt Stillo. This episode was engineered by Matt Stillo
and written by Molly Socha.
This episode was edited by Sierra Spreen.
And special thanks to our teammates at Ruby Studio, including Ethan Fixell, Rachel Swan Krasnoff, Amber Smith, Deborah Garrett, and Andy Kelly.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Relax and unwind tonight with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as another busy work week flies by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.